Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Strength in Recovery podcast. August 31st is International Overdose Awareness Day, leading up and it ushers in September, which is Recovery Month. And so today we really felt like it was important to discuss overdose awareness. How do you help someone who maybe has experienced an overdose? Or someone whose loved one has passed from overdose. So I have an incredible panel of guests today. We'll start with Jill Showers. She's a senior alumni coordinator from Lighthouse, which is in Mays Landing, New Jersey. I also have our senior alumni coordinator, Marguerite Warner. She's from our Raritan Bay location, located in South Amboy, New Jersey. We have Jill DeMayo, Manager of Alumni and Family Engagement. She is also a certified family recovery specialist. Jill Robinson, she's our alumni coordinator from our Danvers location in Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. And then another Massachusetts individual, Peter Gregory, for participating with us today. Alumni coordinator from Westminster, Massachusetts. So thank you all for being here. I know this is a topic that hits close to home, something all of us who work in recovery are very passionate about. So I'm going to just go to Marguerite first to kind of open the discussion. Would you mind talking a little bit about what is overdose awareness? Why do we need a day to talk about this?
Sure, Jay. Hello, everybody. So basically, like the recognition of Overdose Awareness Day has multiple facets to it. One is to acknowledge those who have lost someone to the disease of addiction through overdose. But it's also really important to recognize those who are out there still sick and suffering in silence and don't have the courage to reach out and actually speak to what's going on with them. Like the main purpose in this process is really, if we talk about overdose, there's a possibility you could save another human being's life, rather than finding shame or, feeling it's a weakness in will, or perhaps like I've often heard that, poor moral character. It has nothing to do with that. This is a disease. Addiction is a disease. And when we have, in dealing with people, not only our families and our friends and our loved ones, but anyone in our community, talking about this brings an awareness to the community. And it begins to break what we call the stigma, right? Breaking the stigma of addiction. There's a few things that I participated in to bring awareness to Overdose Awareness Day. A couple of them were purple flag ceremonies. So if you see different municipal buildings, different school buildings, what they'll do is they'll put out purple flags on their lawn, and it's to signify the amount of people during a set period of time in that community that were lost and reported as lost to overdose. And it's really to bring an awareness of the impact that this has on our community, young and old. And that's the beginning of it, right? Talking about it, having that awareness of it. There's multiple different walks that you can participate in, wearing different, apparel or attire that state break the stigma, right? Speak about this, talk about this, give your addiction a voice. So that's what we really encourage, right? Is to bring this awareness to it. And the key indicators and signs and things that I'm sure you're going to have the team here speak to about what do we look for? How do we support this, right? Not only how do we support the person struggling and suffering with the addiction, but how do we support the family members that are going through, the traumatic experience that they have had?
It's really great. And I think as we've gone through as a country, the overdose epidemic, the opioid epidemic, which has led to a crisis. And there's not one family that I know of who hasn't been personally touched in some way. And how do you come to terms with kind of, we all work in recovery, there's usually some sort of connection that we have to either overdose or substance use. Would either any of you like to jump in there and talk about how this has hit home?
Jill? So Yes. So I have lost many people to overdoses. I got sober about 8 years ago and have been going to the rooms ever since, you know, the rooms of AA, NA, Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, any 12-step groups that I could, in the beginning, any 12-step group that I could get into, it's where I felt safe. I have in developing bonds together in those rooms. You know, unfortunately, not everybody makes it, right? Not everybody continues to come and sees, you know, the 12 steps as a way out, or, you know, and we lose people very quickly. But like I've had loss, you know, in my family as well. And I truly love, I know it sounds weird to say, but I love Overdose Awareness Day, because my mom, you know, I work in treatment and I go to, you know, 12-step meetings, and I get to speak with people who, you know, don't blink twice when I say, you know, my family member died of an overdose, right? My mom is not as comfortable saying that. You know, my family members are not as comfortable saying that. So this gives them one day to be able to be around a bunch of people that she can finally say, you know, they can finally say, you know, I lost this person. You know what I mean? I lost this family member. I lost the person that was, you know, a piece of me. I lost a piece of me to this disease that nobody wants to talk about, or that we don't want to, you know, draw attention to, because we feel shame that it happened, right? And, you know, or it happened to my family, or it happened to me, or it happened, you know, like it was something that, you know, came down and it was like a plague on our house, you know? And, I've gotten to see so many family members and so many of the people that I've had been able to make a lot of connections with, just be able to speak their loved ones' names. And I've come to, you know, into contact with a lot of people who feel the same way, where, you know, they have a place to talk about it, and they have people around them who understand at that point, or even if they don't understand, that they're in the same boat, they're not understanding why this happened together. And, you know, and it's usually in a big, beautiful way with, you know, remembrance, banners and things like that. I absolutely love being able to attend these events and things like that. You know, we're doing, a recovery walk with a couple nonprofits through Lighthouse, you know, in finding different events for Lighthouse to be able to do. I love being able to help out with events like that. So we are going to be walking the boardwalk up and down, you know, with RCA as a whole, with some of our business development team, and we get to spread awareness and break stigma together on the Atlantic City boardwalk. So that'll be upcoming with Lighthouse.
That is so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think it's important, like you said, for people to just have a place, to have a day, to be able to share openly. You know, if someone was diagnosed with diabetes or cancer, you don't have that same sort of stigma or shame that's intertwined so closely like it is with this disease. Jill Robinson, talk to us a little bit about your experience.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for having me and inviting me to participate in this. One thing that, I mean, as somebody who is a grateful recovering addict, I have my own experiences with overdose. But since entering the field, I feel like I've been more impacted by that on a personal and professional level. We've lost patients, and not only have we lost patients early on in my career at RCA, we lost a colleague that was very dear to me. That was a huge impact on my treatment here, and really helped propel me into a life in recovery. And about 3 months into my tenure at RCA, we lost her to an overdose. And that, like, that really smacked me in the face, that loss, because it made me really be more aware and more mindful of the fact that those of us who are in personal recovery, even though, you know, regardless of how many years we have, this person had, I think, close to a decade, we are still vulnerable to that. And by taking on the traumas of our patients on a daily basis, if we're not really, if we don't practice our own, whatever our own personal recovery is on a daily basis, and really check ourselves to make sure that, you know, the work we do isn't impacting our lives in a negative way, that, you know, we can find ourselves in those positions. And I, you know, take every opportunity I can to honor my colleague, because she was so instrumental, and her memory lives on every day in the halls of RCA Danvers. And we really try to honor her by continuing to do good work and continuing to be advocates and continuing to break stigma. One thing that I was thinking about as you guys were talking is the obituaries that we see in the paper and how they're usually worded. And it's usually, you know, somebody, you know, a younger person, and it says something like died suddenly or died unexpectedly. And I get why the families don't want to necessarily attach the stigma of this disease to their loved one who they've lost in that obituary. But at the same time, I've started to also see people talk about the disease in their loved one's obituary and honor their road to recovery, and the fact that, you know, they may have, and I don't like to say the word lost their battle, but succumbed to their disease, but talk about the connections that they were able to make when they were in recovery and the causes that they stood for, and put faces to all the nameless that we've lost as a result of, especially as a result of the opioid epidemic. In 2023 in Massachusetts, we lost 2,125 confirmed opioid-related deaths. It's the first year in, I think, over a decade where that number dropped 10%, which is great. It's just a great trend. We'll see if that trend continues in 2024. But that's still over 2,000 lives, 2,000 young lives that were not able to kind of come to the fruition and really be able to experience the gifts that recovery offer. And I think that, you know, we would be to not have a day to honor those people and to not have a day where those families feel safe to honor these people and say, you know, this is a tangible life that was lost as a result of this epidemic, and celebrate them for the lives that they were able to lead, even if it was shortened. But just to start breaking stigma, like we're seeing purple ribbons, you know, splattered across our, you know, telephone poles, and, you know, and people wear t-shirts that promote overdose awareness. I think that we're on a trend where we can start breaking that stigma and start making families be more comfortable to say this person was another casualty of this epidemic, and we need to continue to work even harder to make resources be available to these people. We got to continue to hand out Narcan. We have to, you know, we're seeing naloxone boxes, like, you know, come up in our communities. And that's, you know, although some people have a really, you know, they make, you know, struggle with being able to be okay with those types of things, I think we need to continue to fight for the people that we have lost and fight for the people who are still here struggling to get a foothold in recovery, because that's how we're going to change. That's how we're going to change the stigmas that are associated with this disease.
That's so good. I mean, just really good stuff. And I do think this just really touches all of us who work in recovery. And I think the amount of colleagues, the amount of patients sometimes that we lose can make it makes us passionate about the work for sure, but it does take an individual toll. And thank you for bringing that to mind. Peter, talk to us a little bit.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, the word stigma has popped up a few times, and I'm just looking at the progress we've made as a country, as a, as, as, just where we are today with the fact that we talk about it, that we have, you know, Overdose Awareness Day. We have, we're just more educated, and the progress in overall is growing. And I think that is huge because, you know, back in the day, well, you know, when I was a young teenager, it was, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, and people didn't talk about it. You know, we all know somebody with an addiction, with alcoholism. And it's, I think we educate ourselves by owning that and admitting that we can help each other. And I show up to a job every day where I am helping with this, and I'm helping people get educated on how to do something about it. And we have a day. We're gonna be doing some special things here in Westminster. We're gonna have a barbecue, some live music, some alumni speakers are gonna come in, and the patients are gonna write some notes on some purple balloons and release them. They are biodegradable, with messages to those they've lost. And I'm really excited about it. Our patients are excited about it. But I just think, I'm very optimistic of where we're going as just a world. I just saw last Sunday, I went out to breakfast with my girlfriend, and just a young teenager had a shirt on, and it said, "Say no to drugs," you know, and it's tearing the world apart. And there was a picture on his shirt with the world split in half. I was like, you know what? That's pretty cool. And I think the more that we talk about it, the more that we have special days like Overdose Awareness, the better we'll be in the future.
Thank you for that, Peter. I think I think that's true. I think the shirts help. You know, I saw a lady this week, and she had a fentanyl, an elderly lady with a fentanyl awareness t-shirt. And I just wanted to go up and give her a hug. I didn't, because, you know, I didn't know if that would be appropriate. But I was just like, man, how awesome that somebody of a different generation, of a different time, where this was very shameful, where it wasn't talked about, can just be out in her community, spreading that awareness. So I do think all of those little things, the ribbons on the trees, they were passing out purple ribbons to start this as Overdose Awareness Week, leading up to the 31st at the office. And all of those things are meaningful. All of them, people will ask questions. And I think it is important. Jill Showers, you have something to add.
I absolutely love what Peter and Jill said. You know, I do think that every year there's more and more of these events and more of these places that are putting purple balloons out or purple flags and things like that. And these are opportunities. Every single one of those is an opportunity to get information about Narcan into somebody's hands, right? It's nobody's going to know that you have some Narcan in your glove box, right? But it could save somebody's life. You have no idea how important, you know, naloxone can be. And just getting some of like the basic information to people that like on the streets, you know what I mean? Like once you distribute the Narcan, or once you administer the Narcan, here's what to expect from a person who is going to wake up from an overdose. You know, they might not know where they are. We have an opportunity here with every single one of these events to get more information out to our communities, to keep our communities safer. We wouldn't have to lose as many people as we do if I think more people were educated on, MAT services for their loved ones, right? You know, are we talking about Vivitrol and what that looks like, or Sublocade and what that looks like? Are we getting all this information out there where it's not, you know, so hard to get, you know, your loved one treatment, right? Can we get treatment lists out there? Can we get business development out, you know, numbers to people so that if they have somebody that needs treatment, they have a place to call immediately, right? Like, let's face it, we have a very small window sometimes of people willing to seek treatment.
And to be able to get, you know, a number into somebody's hand that if the, when they're willing, call this number immediately, you can save somebody's life. So I absolutely love that, you know, there's special days like this. Overdose Awareness, Black Balloon Day is another one in March, you know, throughout the year, we're just raising awareness and getting, you know, information and things that could save lives out to people. And I think it's incredible that it does keep growing. Like Peter said, I think that we've come a long way, but I think that we have, you know, a long way to go.
I agree so much. And I started caring. I think Marguerite, you and I were at a recovery fair in New Jersey at one point, and they had these pouches with a Narcan and the little instructions. I went online. I did Narcan training. It was super easy, just in YouTube. So I knew what I, you know, I carry that with me on every day. I also, it's back to school time. I made sure my daughter's in a college dorm. I'm like, you're taking these with you, you know, and breaking down kind of that can be intimidating to think about Narcan. And delivering that, but understanding that it doesn't have to be, that you can quickly learn those steps with a YouTube or a Google search and educate yourself and educate your loved ones, I think is so important. Jill, you are a certified family recovery specialist. What words do you have for families? Maybe what are signs they can look for that a loved one maybe close to an overdose, or what are some thoughts for families?
Yeah, I think the scariest thing about this disease is how isolating it can be. I think it's incredibly isolating for families. We've talked a lot about shame today, but that feeling of, you know, guilt and the inability to talk to others about it, because maybe other families won't understand what you're feeling, or maybe there's guilt associated with, you know, I wasn't able to keep my loved one off of drugs, or I wasn't able to stop them from developing this disease. But on the other side of things, for the person that is suffering from the disease, the isolation is very scary, especially when you're using, you know, drug use and alcohol use can be life-threatening at all times, but when you're using it alone or when you're using it without letting anybody know, it can be especially dangerous and life-threatening. So I would say to families, if you are noticing increased isolation with your loved one, if you're noticing they are being, you know, maybe a lot more secretive, doing things behind your back, you're not sure where they're going or, you know, who they're with, or if they're spending all of their time, you know, up in their room, or if they're not engaging with society and not, you know, focusing on their recovery, if they've started that journey, those are scary signs to look for in terms of, you know, their use and how you might be able to step in, having that, you know, open line of communication with your loved one, just saying, you know, I suspect that you might be using, or I suspect that you're going through a difficult time. I want to be here to support you. What can we do? How can we, you know, take a path forward together to make sure that you are safe and, you know, remaining as healthy as you can? But watching out for that isolation, I think, is key. And, you know, being open with your loved one, not shaming them, remembering that this is a disease. This is something their brain has been, you know, rehardwired by these substances. So, you know, as much as we want to look at them and shake them and say, stop, it's not as simple as that. Right. So believing in treatment, understanding the, you know, the efficacy of treatment, and really just being there to support, even when it's hard, even when you might not fully understand why they are making the decisions that they are, or why they are exhibiting the behaviors that they're exhibiting, working to understand and, you know, talking with them and letting them know that they have you in their corner can be a huge difference and, you know, can stop them from picking up and using once again.
So good. Thank you. Marguerite, finish us up here today. Talk to us a little bit about how do we help someone find the courage to seek treatment?
One of the things that I wanted to comment on is, you know, when Jay, when you were saying about you saw an elderly woman wearing the fentanyl awareness shirt, you know, it's really important to understand that this disease does not discriminate. You will find it in grammar school, you will find it in high school, and you will find it in senior living, right? Okay. It's a fact, and we need to look at that realistically. It does take a lot of courage to actually come to the point where you're willing to surrender and admit that complete defeat and say that I need help. I need help is a very difficult thing for an active alcoholic or addict to say, right? But I think what we're doing right now, the podcast, you know, what all of us in this podcast do on a daily basis is to put the message out there, right, that there is help, you know, and watch for that moment. Truthfully, that I think that's what most of us do on a daily basis with our, you know, with our alumni that are no longer a part of our inpatient program. We watch for that moment when we see that willingness and that readiness, and we support 110% to help guide that person back into treatment, right, if they need to return, or, you know, just doing what we do, just, you know, like making it realistic to a person that it's okay. You know what I mean? It is okay that you have this illness or you have this disease, and that there is a solution to it and that there is help out there for you. I think the biggest part of people not wanting to ask for help is because of the shame factor, you know, and the fear of, I can't do this to my family. I can't do this to my parents. I can't do this to my wife or my children. Well, yeah, you can, because what you're actually doing to them is you're giving them a new life, right?
Yeah. So. I love that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. What a beautiful way you can help them to a new life. I think that's powerful. Thank you to our three Jills today, Jill Showers, Jill Robinson, and Jill DeMeo. We love Jills on the alumni team, as well as Peter Gregory and Marguerite Warner for your time and your attention to overdose awareness. Thank you all. And we wish you all the best in recovery and in life.
Thank you for listening to the Strength in Recovery podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please tap the subscribe button and leave us a review. We love hearing from our listeners and hope to reach more of you out there as we continue to share these incredible stories of recovery. The RCA alumni team aims to provide a safe, supportive environment for those in the recovery community, regardless of their affiliation with RCA. We host a full calendar of virtual and in-person meetings, as well as free sober events every month. To learn more about what we do, find us at rcaalumni.com. Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, pick up the phone and dial 1-833-RCA-ALUM. Help is available 24/7. Listen to another episode now, or join us next time for the Strength in Recovery podcast.